Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Sarah Sam Elliston, and she is author of Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. The funny thing is that Sarah Elliston never realized that she was a difficult person, someone who harangued people until she got her own way, threw snip fits and temper tantrums, talked over her bosses, and pointed out what she thought were their misconceptions. In her family, where she felt bullied, the only way that she knew how to get someone's attention and approval was to voice her opinion and loudly. Without standing her ground, how could she do what she thought was best for herself and for everyone else around her? She wasn't intentionally mean-spirited. She was just trying to do what she thought was right. Today, Sarah is a highly successful workshop leader and trainer who offers wisdom learned through the hard way and through a rigorous study and certification in many areas of professional training that aid her in her work. Values realization, parent effectiveness training, and reality therapy. She is a faculty member of the William Gassner Institute. Gassner is an internationally recognized psychiatrist and developer of reality therapy, a method of psychotherapy and how they choose to behave. For more information, you can visit her website, which is sarahelliston.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Sarah to the show. Sam, to the show. Good day. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for inviting me. Happy to be
it
here.
It is my pleasure. Great. Now, you're not going to be difficult today, right?
Try not to be. You never know.
I just had to do that.
That's fine.
Well, listen, Well, you know, I'm really happy to talk with you today. I think everyone listening will have experienced or are currently experiencing at least one difficult person in their life. So any information that you share with us today, I'm sure is going to be helpful.
Great.
Well, let's first of all start with, you know, in your book, in the very beginning, you call yourself a recovering difficult person. So is this for people who are difficult? I mean, is it one of those cases where that you kind of have to be constantly, you know, kind of aware of that possibility, that tendency, maybe that, you know, something that that kind of behavior?
Well, it is for me. I don't know about other people. And I did write the book for the people who are trying to get along with difficult people, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who've read the book that said, oh, maybe I'm a difficult person. So that's been a response that I wasn't expecting. But, yeah, if you think you're difficult, then there's a possibility that you are. And it's always good to be sort of aware of what your impact is on other people. I was completely unaware of my impact. It just never occurred to me that people noticed me any more than anybody else.
Yeah. You know, that was the one thing as I was going through reading your book too, is I recognized, you know, there are times when, you know, I know that I've been difficult and, you know, that kind of, it kind of raises awareness, really. So how would you describe just what makes someone, the perception of someone being difficult?
Well, I think that my sort of quick and dirty response is if there's someone in your life that you have to be with, I mean, they're continually in your life, work or family or community or your neighbor or church or something, and you'd really just cheerfully like to strangle them, you know, with a smile on your face because they're just driving you crazy, there's a good chance that you're perceiving that person to be difficult. And otherwise, I mean, it's pretty hard to describe a difficult person. I did look at an advertisement for a workshop for people who might want to go to a workshop on dealing with difficult people, and they called them manipulators and passive aggressive, and they had a lot of names for people. The person that's always the no person, or the argumentative, or they just had a long list of names and or words. And I haven't found that useful in describing myself or other people. I've just found that the first step in this whole process is to look at the whoever it is in your life who's difficult or you perceive as difficult. They're creating you're feeling difficult. Let's see, how do we put it? You're feeling that they are difficult, whether they are or not. It's creating that feeling in you. The first thing that we have to do, and this is almost one of the hardest things in the whole process, is to stop labeling their behavior, stop describing them with the emotion-laden words. Actually, if people go to my website and sign up, they give me their email and sign up for my my email list, they'll get a couple of pages from the workshops that I lead, and one of those pages is a list of, you know, negative terms like passive-aggressive and manipulative and bossy and I forget the others. And the challenge is, can you describe whatever that behavior is in positive ways? So we call someone passive-aggressive. What are they doing? Have you ever called anyone that?
Yeah, no, not me. I've been called.
Say manipulative. You know, we say, "Oh, that person's just." We just say, "Have you?" I've heard people call that. I don't think anyone's called me that. I don't know. If they did, they didn't do it to my face. But let's say manipulative. Okay, so you say, "Oh, that person's just so manipulative. I just can't trust them," because you think they're trying to get you to do something. And so when they say something nice to you or they ask you to do something, you think it's for – you start judging all their motivations. And really, it's if we take that term out of there and we just say, this person knows what they want, and that takes all the judgment out, it's still – we're still looking at them. We haven't said they're wonderful people, but we can – kind of change a little bit and take a lot of the drama out of it if we just say, oh, well, that person knows what they want. You can call it bossy. I'm going to say this person's very clear on what works for them. Doesn't mean I'm going to do it, but I can respect their knowing what they need or what they want. See the difference?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, in your book, you've got quite a few exercises.
Yes, I do.
That kind of falls into exercise one, which I found.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I want to go ahead and talk about it. I had it later in the list, but I'm going to move it up since we're kind of talking about it now. Because I found that one really interesting. You know, in that particular exercise, and this is to give the listeners an example, again, of some of the exercises that you have in your book that I think really is one of the biggest benefits of the book is being able to help people work through and identify, you know, difficult behavior. In this one, you it says, like, step one in it is to identify what you think the negative behavior of the difficult person, write it down, all the complaints, and then you indicate then from that point on, examine if it's really a behavior or it's a judgment, you know, and, you know, see, right then, all of a sudden, you force someone to do some self-examination, you know. Am I judging or is this a behavior?
And so often it is a judgment. I was talking to a different audience yesterday and someone called in and said, well, what do you do when someone is really, really nice out in the world and then he's a monster at home? And so there you are. We don't know what that means. So we had to invite the caller to define what monster means. What exactly does the person say? What does the person do? and what actions are they taking? And this is something I learned in parent effectiveness training, and it just really stood me in good stead, is that when someone is complaining about another person, if I can get it back to what are the words that are being said and what are the actions being taken, we can address those. But when we lay down or layer down all these negative, judgmental opinions that we have, that our culture or our world or our parents or our school or wherever we are has laid into us, and we just say, well, that's not okay, that's whatever word we want to give it, we can't, how are you going to ever bridge that? And I, gosh, in our mm-hmm. world today, I think we're looking for ways to bridge, right?
Lord, yes.
Communicate. So the first thing is to do that exercise, and it's pretty challenging. Exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, in that one, once kind of you've gone through that process of, you know, identifying, you know, behavior and judgment, mm-hmm. you also indicate that to try to describe the behavior in the positive way, like you did, you know, just a mm-hmm. few minutes ago. And then, you know, if you're able to do that, then basically you're describing the behavior. From that point on, then you are away from the realm of judgment into the area of behavior. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
it takes a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You go ahead. You've got a plan in your head here. So I just responding to that.
Yeah,
I think the judgments keep creeping in.
Yeah.
No matter how we So even before we get to this exercise, I talk about motivation in the book. And I learned from Dr. William Glasser with the Institute for Reality Therapy, motivation is very simple. We have five basic needs. We're always acting on the world to get those needs met. Whether it makes sense to the rest of the world or not, or even whether it works or not, we keep doing it. And the needs are belonging, the most important one, a need for fun, a need for freedom, a need for achievement and a certain sense of uniqueness, and then a need for survival. And we're all acting on the world to get those needs met. Okay? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so if that's true, then we don't have to worry about why somebody does what they do. It's trying to meet one of those needs. And we can look and see if we can figure out what need they're trying to meet or not. But it doesn't necessarily enlighten us or help the conversation if we're trying to figure them out. The point is we don't have to worry about their motivation. We don't have to spend hours thinking, I wonder why she does that. Well, why would anybody do that? Well, nobody really ought to do that. So isn't it awful that she does that? You know, we build this whole thing up. So even people who are doing the same things over and over again, hoping for a different result, you know, we've all done that ourselves. But, you know, we all know people that are doing that. And we think, don't they see that it's not working? It's the only behavior they know. So the whole point about the difficult person not knowing what they're doing and not knowing that they're difficult, not being aware of whatever their behavior is, whatever their actions are that are driving other people crazy. That's the reason I wrote the book, is so that the rest of the world would talk to us difficult people and tell us a little earlier in our lives maybe than I was told, tell us in such a way that maybe we can stop doing some of those things and actually probably get our needs met better. If we are given the opportunity to do so. Yeah. That was a long circle there. I don't know if you followed that.
No. Great. No, it was a perfect circle because it really brought up a good... Because I kind of want to talk a little bit about that. First of all, you know, the idea of, you know, recognition of motivation, that, you know, the motivation goes to fulfilling one of those five needs that you areas of mm-hmm. Need that you indicate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can understand that, you know, really understanding the motivation doesn't really do a whole lot. You know, I mean, in the sense that it's really up to the individual who's being difficult to, you know, to maybe recognize and change if they want, you know, those particular needs.
So, for example, what happened for me was that I lost something, and I was stomping around in a fairly small space. We had about 5 cubicles in a fairly small space, and I was stomping around looking for it, opening drawers and going in and out of the office and making noise and talking to myself and getting more and more exasperated about it. And my boss, having already introduced to me the idea that there was this one little thing I did that she didn't like, that I didn't know what she was talking about. So at this point, she could say to me, Sam, what you're doing right now, what you're doing, do you know what you're doing right now? And she described the things I was doing, and she said, did you know you're doing that? It's driving the rest of us crazy. We can't get our work done. I said, really? A, I wasn't aware I was doing it, and B, I didn't know anybody else noticed, and I was certainly not intending to make their workspace, you know, a place where they couldn't get their work done. And maybe if we'd had more of a conversation, she might have said, so what's the problem? You've lost your glasses. Would you like some help? You know, maybe it would have been that simple. She wasn't worried about my motivation as much as she was to just point it out to me, because she'd brought it up to me once before. And so for me, it was a real aha moment of just sort of sitting down at my desk and looking at myself and saying, you know what? I was having a little temper tantrum, but I didn't know anybody was noticing.
Right.
I don't know if other difficult people who have temper tantrums think nobody notices them, but I certainly thought I was invisible. So it's just interesting.
So, with
so
that
my motivation
aspect,
there, she didn't go into my motivation, or she could have. She could have said,
no.
So what's the problem, you know? And then
we
could have tried to figure it out.
Exactly. So, with the motivation on that particular one. Now, by the way, did you find your glasses ever after all?
I never found those glasses. No.
Okay.
To this day, I don't know where they went.
Okay.
It was so funny.
Oh boy. Well, they'll pop
that
up.
That car ate my glasses and it ate my pearls. That particular car.
But see, that whole incident led to this whole discovery in this book and this whole path that you're on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So that was a loss worth living. One of the things is, you know, since we're talking about motivation in that particular one, you know, if she had asked, you know, why you were doing that, and what I'm kind of struggling with is, you know, the balance between, you know, wanting to know the motivation or not, you know, whether it's necessary or not. Now, in that particular case, you said, you know, if she had asked, you know, why were you having this fit, you know, and what was behind it, you know, then started getting into the glasses. In one particular case, one of the needs that you mentioned is belonging, you know, that sometimes people, there's a need to feel that you're loved, you belong, you're appreciated, you know, those kinds of things. If that's a motivation behind someone being difficult, wouldn't it benefit me to know, at least instinctively, not necessarily coming out and talking about, you know, being blind, but wouldn't it help me in being able to help, first of all, not feel that, you know, this difficult behavior, you know, it needs to irritate me, but be able to help maybe the other person feel belonged, that they belong, you know?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. I think I did try to point that out in a number of places, so I think you got my message, which is that the most important need for everybody is the need to belong. And so by having a non-confrontational conversation, by having someone sit down and say, you know, did you know you do this? And that it has this impact? Did you know you do it? And are you aware of this impact? And is that what you want? And it's usually you weave into that, you know, we like having you here. Your work is very good, depending on, you know, whether you're a member of the family, we love you, whatever, however you work it in. But by giving them the choice and to see, first of all, to identify what they're doing, and secondly, to understand what the impact of that behavior is, they will most often naturally, if it's a real negative impact and a negative consequence, they will most often want the belonging and want to be part of it so much that they will look for ways to modify or change. Initially, you might get denial and you might get, well, it's not my fault and that kind of thing. But
mm-hmm.
if you listen and you stay with your basic points and don't get trapped in their complaints, you can help them make the choice to do something that will help them feel more as if they are a part of and belong. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The challenge is when someone's doing something that you find extraordinarily awful, but they're getting what they want. You know, they may be
mm-hmm.
a bully, they may be a loudmouth, they may be very unpleasant, but everyone's doing what they want, what the individual wants them to do. It's pretty
mm-hmm.
hard to say to them, you know, when you do that, it has this impact. Because they're not going to see that impact.
They're going to see that they get what they want.
Mm-hmm. And unless it's against the law, and even then, they don't always doesn't seem to make a difference. But so I've had people in my workshops and just in chatting, they say, "Well, I know folks that do not want to change," and my response is that's because
mm-hmm.
the consequences of not changing aren't strong enough. Now, if somebody is faced with not having a job anymore or not having the family come to Christmas dinner or you know, anything on that spectrum, and that the job or the family is important to them, then they might listen, or they'll listen more than if someone just says, you know what, I can't deal with you anymore, I'm throwing up my hands in despair and marching out because I can't talk to you anymore. And that's not what we want.
Yeah.
That's the opposite of where we want to go.
Yeah, but that doesn't solve, you know, that relationship. By the way, I do want to let listeners know in about 5 minutes we're going to have a quick break. And if you want to call in and ask Sam any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions you would like for me to pose to Sam, feel free to type them in and we'll get to them. So, one of the things that you mentioned, you know, that when you initially start talking to an individual
mm-hmm.
about their being difficult, that one of the things that you don't want them to do is kind of end up in frustration and walk away. So when you're talking with someone, first of all, is it common for people to avoid even bringing up difficult behavior just because of what will come up?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's why I wrote the book, because I began to realize that people avoided me because they thought I would respond negatively. And we're not really taught how to do this. It's not what we observe on television. It's not what we often observe in our families. I do know people whose families used to have sort of meetings where they tried to talk things through, and that's sort of the first step in this process. But most of us, had arguments with our parents or watched our parents argue with each other and struggled through it. And came out the other side, hopefully with a relationship with our parents. But we're taught that it's rude to tell someone they shouldn't be doing something. You know, you don't say
mm-hmm.
anything. You just avoid them. You go around them. And I even give an example in the book of the agency here in Cincinnati that, you know, spent 2 years developing a dress code rather than saying to it was an administrator. It was a friend of mine, colleague who had the situation, spent 2 years developing a dress code rather than saying to the administrator, you know, the women in your division are allowed to wear pants to work. His culture was such that he wouldn't let them. And this was in the '90s, you know, the late '90s, and it's just fascinating. I bet if you thought about it, you know of times in your life, and you know of situations where an entire system gets changed or modified because one person is doing something, and nobody wants to say, "Hey, cut it out." And of course, that's, I'm not suggesting that you were going to say it in those terms, "Hey, cut it out," but that having the conference, if you take classes in communication skills, they'll talk to you about confrontation skills, and I'm urging you not to confront. I'm urging you to have a conversation, because confrontation immediately creates a barrier. It implies an enmity. It implies antagonism. It's confronting is like there's a bump there, right? And I don't want to have the bump. Because I know what it feels like as a difficult person when people say something and the response, my response, well, you know, when you do this, we all feel this way, or when you do that, it makes us feel. My reaction was, I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm not responsible for your feelings. You know, I've taken self-help books. I've done some reading. I'm not responsible for your feelings. That wasn't really what they meant, but that's all they knew how to say.
No.
And I have, you know, in retrospect, I apologize. But yes, the answer to your question is people, we're very uncomfortable turning to someone else and saying what you're doing isn't working. It isn't positive for our environment or our energy or our family or whatever it is. Because we know they're going to say, "What do you mean? I'm fine." You know, the first thing is always denial and negativity, you know.
Yeah.
And you've read the book, so you know that I've got some practices in there of exercises of how to listen to that and how to stay centered, if you want to use that term, sort of stay focused on what your point is and let them blow, let them rant and rave, whatever, however they want to respond, and say, "Yeah, I can tell you really don't like my telling you this," or "I can tell you're defensive and you're feeling picked on," or whatever they're feeling. And the fact is, you say this, you do this, and it has this impact. And I just wondered if you knew that you did it.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is funny. We're going to take a break, but I had a situation today, this morning.
No.
As a matter, yes, I did.
Oh,
and it was a case where, you know, I was with someone who got very angry. You know, I'm helping with a friend who whose mom just went into assisted living, and.
Mm.
And you know, and they're not handling, you know, the whole process is just daunting, and they, you know, there's been several areas of miscommunication. So the person I was with got just very angry, you know, and I was trying to, you know, state that, you know, you have a right to be mad. This isn't working right, you know, but, you know, going in there to the meeting, and there was a meeting that I actually kind of was asked to join because he recognized that it was a good thing for me to be there. That you know, going in there and expressing that anger, dropping the F-bomb every five words wasn't going to be effective, you know, and it was only really going to make things worse, you know, and it's like you can be angry without having to, you know, blow your top and you know, create a situation where, you know, what you want to happen just doesn't gets lost in the emotion. And so in that particular case, it's like, boy, you know, I am glad I read this book. And afterwards, he asked me, "Now, did you set up that interview just because of this?" But anyway,
so he followed your advice.
Yes.
He followed your advice.
Yes. Yes, it did. And very much like you indicate in the book, there was at first the idea of, you know, number one, I have a right to be angry. I have a right to explode. I'm not aggressive. What I'm doing is not aggressive. And, you know, and very much like you said, you know, the idea of it's not my responsibility for how people feel, you know. I mean, so there was a bit of that, but calmness and to the point, it was like, you know, finally got through. But you know, and during that meeting, it was very tempered. Really happy, and we were able to come to, you know, agreement as to what the problems were, what needed to be resolved, the plan of action, but also was very clear. The company was very clear that we just were not happy with the way that they've been, you know, operating. And then it won't continue, you know. So it was just one of those things. But anyway,
a break. But I just a little tweak on your story is that the next time you're in that position, and maybe you did this, but I would encourage you to ask him, do you think it will do you any good to be that angry in the meeting, rather than telling him it won't do you any good? And maybe you asked him, and just in your story you did the telling. But giving the other person the chance to make that decision is incredibly liberating. And it's just one more little piece of letting them be responsible. But it sounds like you were definitely there for your friend and was very helpful.
I'm glad
you read the book, too.
Well, you know, and that's a very good point too. And you know, this is one of those things that, you know, it's a learning experience. You know. You know, next time, and there will be a next time. Maybe not with the same person, but there will be a next time. You know, I'll remember to allow to give the opportunity for the person to take responsibility.
And that's not something that we're not taught that either. What we've experienced anyway is people saying, no, if you want to do this right, here's what you should do. You know, an adult telling a child, or, you know, a spouse saying, well, now when you go into that meeting, do this and do that. And if you ask, it's a subtle concept, but if you say, do you think asking him this way will be more successful or this way? Which do you think will get what you want? As long as it's not too patronizing or they don't take it that way, it gives them a chance to be more responsible, that's all. It's just one of those little tweaks.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's go ahead and take the quick break. And then when we come back, one of the areas that in part of this process in dealing with a difficult person is you suggest that there should be ways that we can incorporate incentives to help people change. So when we come back from break, I'd like to talk a little bit about that, okay?
Sure.
Okay, great. Again, everyone, if you have any questions, feel free to call in 619-789-4359. Or those of you in the chat, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in at any time. And we'll be right back after this 90-second break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Sam Elliston. She is author of Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. Again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.sarahelliston.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Okay.
Any questions?
So, nobody in the queue, and no questions in the chat room now. So, again, in the chat room, feel free to type them in any time. Okay, so kind of mentioned incentives, but I think the one thing that I want to talk just a little bit about first is that, you know, how can we, I mean, we're dealing with a difficult person. Some people, you know, aren't aware, like you mentioned, some people aren't aware that they're being difficult or their behaviors are creating difficulty. And some may be, though. So now, and some people would be willing to change, and some people, like you said, you know, if they recognize what they're doing gets what they want or meets those needs, that they're maybe might be unwilling to change. So if we're in a situation where we have a difficult person who recognizes that they're being difficult and recognizes that that difficult behavior is getting them what they want, would it be fruitless effort to try and make them aware of that and to maybe have them choose to modify their behavior?
Well, I don't know. If they chose to, that would be lovely, but I'm just not sure if people, you know, your premise was if they know they're being difficult.
Right.
And I think once people know that they're being perceived as difficult and there's a negative consequence for that, that's going to impact them. You know, like they're going to lose their job or they're going to lose their spouse or they're going to lose something that they really want, then I don't think they'd be as unwilling to change. The resistance comes when they don't believe what they're doing is a problem, or they think the reason that it's a problem is the other person's fault. And why every situation is different, but that's why I say you really need to have a very concrete description of the behavior. When you slap your wife, that's called abuse.
Yeah.
You know, I know
yeah.
it wasn't 100 mm-hmm. years ago, but it is now. And so it's not okay, and you're going to get, you know, arrested or whatever. I don't know what happens when that happens, but I don't know all the consequences for it, but eventually you're not going to be married anymore, and maybe that's what you want. But it's her fault. She made me do it. Well, that's where you have to, you know, that's where you have to listen with the listening process to say, no, nobody can make anybody do anything.
Right.
And sometimes that's a whole conversation in itself, but she didn't have your supper on the table at the right time, and so your response was to slap her. Have you done it before? Has it worked? Well, maybe it worked for a while, but then, oh my gosh, here we are again, and she didn't have the supper on the table. So is slapping her every time she doesn't have it on the table, is that what you really want? I mean, does it make you feel closer to her or farther away? Which do you, you know, all those kinds of questions, they're not really part of the book, but that's, I guess, when you got someone who isn't that much of a denial, you'd really need to be staying with them in terms of how they look at the world.
Yeah.
And is that real? Is it real, or is that just your opinion? And there is a
right.
little section on there that fact or feeling, because a lot of times, you know, we think something is the law of physics, and just turns around, it's your opinion. Oh my goodness!
Right.
I think
yeah.
The voters in this country are feeling that way right now. It's like what we have this fake news and real news, and which is which, and
right.
oh my God, I mean, we all have different opinions here, and why does that mean we have to tear each other apart? I hope it doesn't. I mean, I hope we don't have to. Anyway, no, did that, I went around again in a circle, so I don't know if that was a good answer.
That's okay. Again, what you're
asking is, if someone knows they're difficult and they don't want to change, what do you do? And my reaction is, if they really know that they're difficult and they really don't care about their negative impact, then I give up, kind of. Because people won't change unless the impact is strong enough for them. Not just the impact on others, but the consequence of not changing. I think there's a phrase that people use in the sort of personal growth world that says, we don't change until the pain of not changing is stronger than the pain of changing, because change is hard.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Well, that makes sense. You know, and the reason that I asked that is because I know of someone who is kind of in a situation like that, there is someone who is very difficult and I believe knows it, but also, again, it seems to feed his needs, you know, to satisfy his needs. So, you know, and I don't know that this one person is kind of, you know, at that, I don't know, stage. What else can I do? You know,
can I ask some questions?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of this particular individual, what is it that they say or what do they do? What are their actions?
Well, you know, remember you mentioned earlier about the one of the nice at work and the monster at home.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. You know, it has a very social, very outwardly nice social, very charming, but behind the home scenes, very very aggressive, very verbally abusive. Not to the point of physical abuse, but very, it's like this person isn't really happy with their life in other, in many, many areas. But,
well, that's
but
your interpretation,
but that.
And that may be true.
Yeah.
But let's
define
aggressive. What do you hear that person say or see them do?
See, this is all secondhand. So I mean, I have not witnessed this myself.
Well, so this is what you would ask the person then. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Whoever
great.
Is telling
okay.
you the story, you say, okay, what is aggressive?
Exactly.
What does the person say? What do they do? And then verbally abusive. I know what that's like myself. But what does that look like? And maybe this is a place to bring in the part of the book that is closest to my heart is these two concepts about habits that we get into the habit of doing toxic things. And you tell me if you think this is verbally abusive. Criticizing, blaming, complaining, nagging, threatening, punishing, and bribing. Now, someone who is consistently doing that and saying threatening things or critical things or complaining things to their spouse or a family member, we would probably end up calling them verbally abusive, wouldn't we?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a good chance, I mean, you could try that out and say, are these some of the things that your family member does? Does he or she criticize you all the time? What exactly does he say? The goal is to practice the caring habits that build relationships, which are being supportive, being encouraging, listening, accepting, trusting, respecting, and negotiating differences. And I always like to bring those in because it's fascinating that we don't have those plastered on every wall of every school and church and government building in our country. You know, if we can support each other and encourage each other, accept each other, and trust each other, we won't need to be criticizing, blaming, complaining, nagging, threatening, punishing, and bribing. But so that's the first question is, what exactly does aggressive mean or look like, and what does verbally abusive sound like? Because the terms that you use are real common terms in our culture, but if you say to the person, you're verbally abusive mm-hmm. and aggressive with me, they're going to say, tough beans, that's your opinion.
Right.
You know?
Like, right.
I actually had an employer once who did a performance review with me at about 6 or 7 months and said, we think you're really aggressive and it's very offensive to the staff. And I said, really? What did I say? Well, and of course, they couldn't tell me what I had said. It was just their impression of me. And we did
right.
have very different styles. I'm very direct, and they weren't. And so I think in some of the things that I said, it was perceived that I was being critical when I hadn't intended to be, but that was the way they perceived it. But when I said, what did I say that was aggressive, they couldn't answer me. And in fact, my asking that question felt like an aggression to them. It's fascinating, isn't it? So anyway, I said, okay, fine, and walked away and came in the next day and put in my 2 weeks' notice. And they were, I was blown away. They said, why are you leaving? And I said, well, we don't get along very well, do we? You think I'm aggressive? Well, we thought you'd change.
Wow. Yeah.
And, of course, this was when I was trying not to be difficult. So I thought part of the problem there was the environment for me. So I figured it was a better part of valor to leave.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and that's a really good point. You know, first of all, the recognizing of those toxic habits. You know, I think when it comes to relationships, obviously being a two-way street, you know, we have to not only look at, you know, those habits of others, but also our habits and what which of our habits are do we employ that are toxic to relationships and incorporate more of those caring habits that we really need to.
I agree.
Yeah.
Are you there? Oh, okay.
Yep,
I was
going to
say,
okay.
When you were talking, what I was visualizing was, we all know couples where one person starts to tell the story and the other member of the couple kind of rolls their eyes and says, oh, there she goes again. There are other people where the same thing happens, where one of them's going to tell a story or talk about something that the other one's heard a million times, and the other member of the couple just smiles and watches. And there's none of this sort of negative reaction like, oh, my God, there he goes again, telling you the same old story. I always wonder at that, what's going on that we feel we need to criticize our partner when they're doing what probably attracted us in the first place?
Right.
I don't know. So that's why the caring habits are really critical for me.
Yeah. Well, I have been guilty. My hand is up. I've been guilty of rolling my eyes when a story that I've heard for 27 years be told to someone else. Like, oh, you're not going to be telling that story again, are you?
But somebody likes the story. You know.
Right. And I have to admit, probably, well, no, not, I would say almost 90% plus. You know, if it's the first time someone has heard it, they really enjoy the story. I mean, it's a good story.
Right.
You know, so.
Well,
the other example
that I have, I can remember from when I was a new parent, and we were getting together with a college friend and her husband, and they had a couple of kids. And I noticed that my college friend kept saying about one of her children, oh, well, she's so accident-prone. She's just always falling down. But, you know, she's probably going to be accident-prone all her life. She's probably going to break every bone in her body. And I remember thinking, wow, that's a little scary when someone's like 5 years old and you start labeling her with accident-prone and you're putting labels on your child and she's only five. And I don't know where that fits in the caring habits and the toxic habits, but it was the kind of thing that little bells went off in my head. I was like, I do not want to make those kinds of general statements about my child or my husband or, you know, the people in my life that, oh, well, they're this kind of a person or that kind of a person. It gets too close to being labeling and judging.
Especially when you're talking about child. Because they're so impressionable. Well, you know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, early on in the book you had a comment about, from your mentor, Dr. Sidney Simon, when he talked about the negative selective memory and the red pencil mentality. You know, that, that kind of really falls on that negative aspect of we will remember those negative comments very clearly.
Oh, we do, don't we? Don't you?
No, I do. Yep. And I still have some of them from when I was a child. And every time I popped up, I said, get out of my head. You're gone. Be gone.
I don't need to listen to that anymore. Yeah.
Really? You were wrong. You were wrong, wrong, wrong. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the red pencil mentality kind of haunts us, and I think when I'm perceiving someone as difficult, it depends on the environment. If I'm standing in the grocery line or in the post office line before Christmas, you know, and somebody's got a crying child and she's not treating the child the way I would have treated her, or is, you know, complaining to somebody over the phone about the weight, I just take a deep breath and, you know, try not to look at them through the red pencil glasses. If it's somebody in my family and, you know, I've done everything I can to try and get along with them and they're still acting the way they've always acted, I have a challenge not looking at them through the red pencil glasses. And I think that leads to toxic habits, you know, by looking at them and seeing all the things they're
judging,
doing
wrong. Blaming. And for those listeners, the red pencil mentality was like when you were in class and your teacher would mark up your papers with a red pencil, you know, kind of indicating everything that's wrong. So that's kind of how the term.
That's what we're talking about.
The phrase.
What's so funny because. When I was learning about this, I was teaching school, and so I tried for a few, I don't know how many tests, but I did, I was teaching social studies, and so people had, you know, essay exams and lot short answer questions and stuff. And so instead of marking the points they got taken off, you know, like -5, I would say, well, if the question is worth 10 points, I gave them a +5. And so the first time they looked through, they didn't notice it said plus. They just saw all the numbers in red. And I was getting, wait a minute, I didn't mark them, I didn't pass. I said, can't look at the numbers again. I'm telling you how many points you earned, not how many you lost. And I found it quite interesting that they were very challenged to look at the test.
Right.
I think we did it for the rest of the year in that class, and it was really challenging for them to remember that weren't the points being taken off. Because what's important is not what you've done well, but what you didn't get. You know? It's like, so you got an A minus? What didn't you do right? And, oh, my goodness. If I'd ever gotten an A minus, my parents would have done a double black flip, you know.
Really? Maybe it should have been a green pencil. They marked it up in green pencil.
Right. Oh, I thought, they started having purple pencils and stuff like that.
Oh, purple. Okay, there you
go. I thought it would
purple
be in...
Good.
I liked contradicting the red pencil mentality by telling them what they were doing well.
That was my
motivation. Who knows?
Kind of break it out of the box. That's good. Well, guys, we're down to the very end of the show, Sam. It's really been fun. If there's any thing that what would you want people to walk away with from reading your book? What is your goal and your mission, you know, with this book?
What I really, really want people to be able to do is to maybe stop labeling the person difficult, but what I really want them to do is to develop a process of having a conversation so that they do not feel estranged from whoever they consider difficult, and the difficult person has the opportunity to change. Because, I was 50 before somebody brought it to my attention in such a way that I finally got it. And, you know, it's still, I still have my moments, and I've been working on it for a while. So that was part of my whole thing was like, why didn't someone tell me this when I was 30? You know, what's going on here? How come I had to wait so long to be told this? And that's the way the universe worked. So that's why I wrote the book, and that's what I want people to know, is that by not having the conversation with the other person, you're doing them a real disservice, And, of course, you're missing out on a relationship. And if the person is someone you work with, if it's a family member, it's a tragedy. If it's somebody that's at work who's really good at their job, then it's tragic that you aren't going to be able to have a good team going or whatever, however the project works. But the other thing is that the person who is acting in a way that others consider difficult really doesn't know. They really think this is the right way to be.
Yeah.
And I ache to have people chother. But doing it in the way that I'm suggesting, which is a non-confrontive conversation.
Yeah, that's really important. So, well, I really want to thank you for your time today. I really enjoyed speaking with you. It's been a lot of fun. And like I said, I was able to put some of your principles to good use even today.
I'm so glad to hear that.
That's a good thing. Well, thank you very much, Sam. I really enjoyed our conversation. You're very welcome. I had a good time. Great. Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Sam Elliston. We've been talking about her book, Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. And again, you can find out more about her book as well as her consulting business by visiting her website, which is sarahelliston.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again...
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.